Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where life's least essential, non-political, unimportant questions get answered by two former coworkers, current best friends, and I'm going to take a shot, future disgraced senators. Before my senatorial tenure was brought down by a scandal involving, what's a good guess, spending taxpayer money on cheap scotch and luxury candles, I was a writer for Last Week Tonight and co-host of this podcast, Daniel O'Brien. My co-host, as always, is the former senator from Colorado, Soren Bowie. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of how I get disgraced. I think it's during my death. I've already called my shot on this before that I'm going to be a senator and have sex so good that I catch on fire and die.
Right.
But I'm assuming that has to be with somebody scandalous.
Okay. So, but it's still, so in that way, you're not really like brought down.
No.
You die on top.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That was not the premise. Why does Soren get to be the hero in his bad premise?
That's a very Michael Scott, would you rather be feared or loved? I want them to love how much they fear me, or is it the other way around? Something like that.
Yeah, fear how much they
love me.
Fear how much they love me. Thank you. Who is that? Who just corrected me? Who was that sweet voice?
Hey, Dan. It's Michael.
It's Michael. And
it sounds like, oh, it's like you're getting called by the boy that you like from school.
No, I just don't want to say bacon. But when you make me introduce myself, I know you guys are going to you're going to correct me.
I do. I
just don't want to acknowledge it myself.
I want people to know that we're going to. So for everyone's edification, Bacon, who sometimes thinks his name is Michael, is our CFO and the architect of this entire podcast. And we're actually going to be missing him for a couple of episodes because he's going to be traveling. So this is the last you'll hear from him until he comes back from Europe and is insufferable.
It's an accent all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm playing.
Where's berets?
I'm planning on learning how to drink wine, play classical guitar.
Where are you going, by the way?
You know how to play classical guitar.
Where are you going? Do you mind telling the audience where you're going?
Oh, no, I don't mind at all. I'm going to the Florence part of Tuscany. And then I'm going to Barcelona for a few days. And I've never been to either one of them. So I'm really excited.
Oh, that's fun. Do you have any like excursions planned or anything?
We do. There's a lot of like wine tasting. And then I've always really wanted to see the Gaudi architecture because it always looked real neat.
I believe it's pronounced Gaudi. Of the John Gaudi fan.
Bacon, yeah, I think you should know before you go. It's you're going to embarrass yourself if you say Barcelona.
It's Barcelona.
It's Barcelona. Mm. And then when you go to Florence, you're going to embarrass yourself if you say Florence. It's Firenze. Like that.
I went to Florence a while ago. I never went to the Tuscany part, but I went to Florence like 15 years ago. And I had a very embarrassing moment because I was traveling with someone and I spent like probably 2 quiet hours where I didn't bring it up, but I was like in full panic mode because I had been tasked with like finding the train times to Florence. And I spent like 2 hours panicking
because you couldn't find Florence.
I couldn't find Florence in the fucking book. And and then like finally I gave up. I was like, I don't think the trains go to Florence. Like I think we have to fly there from like Rome or something. And it was embarrassing for me.
That's I found that in Italy that the trains are pretty relaxed about whether or not those trains run or not.
Yeah.
Say what you will about Mussolini. He did one thing, right? Those trains ran on time. Because I didn't plan out my trip very well when I was there. And I was just sort of like, I spent so much of it just sitting in train stations waiting on trains. And occasionally you'd be waiting on a train and then they had the old clacker boards like, and they flip to something else. And like your train wouldn't show up. It'd be 10 minutes late, 20 minutes late. And then just go to a new train, just going somewhere. Go to like Milan. And you're like, oh fuck. So that was just a ghost train. Like it didn't exist. They just cancel a train. Don't tell anyone.
Soren, didn't you sleep in like a bush?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I dream that whole story?
No, that really happened.
Oh, no.
What do you think, Dan? Should we get into this now?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it seems like this is the most natural segue we'll have into it.
So I ran out of money when I was traveling around Europe. I was in college and I had a Eurorail pass. So I had like this pass that could get me anywhere I wanted to go. And I had a Channel pass that was going to bring me back to England from Paris. I just had to be back at a certain date. And during that time, I can take money out of an ATM and stuff, but the currency exchange and stuff, you can't really see how much money you have in the account. So I was just taking money out and thinking I was being very prudent and good with it. And it turned out I wasn't. I ran out of money 4 days before I was supposed to leave. And I was like, fuck. Well, I have a jar of peanut butter. I have that to last me this over the next 4 days. I have some bread. And then for sleeping, what I'll do is I'll just ride the train from Rome to Milan and back every single night and sleep on the train. And the very first night I did that, it became clear that was untenable. Like, it was awful.
No, yeah. It's very clear when you look at those options. You don't sleep on the train. You marry the train. You fuck the peanut butter. You kill the bread.
And so then one night I got really romantic with the idea of being in Europe, and I was like, fuck it. I'm a camper. I'll just sleep outside. And so in Rome, I during the day, while everyone else was out looking at the tourist sites, I was scouting for a place to sleep and went to the Forum above, kind of like above the Colosseum a little bit. The Forum is like this ancient part of Roman history where all democracy was born, basically. And I found some great bushes there, and I was like, this is where it's going to be. There's not a lot of people around. They won't see me go in. So I went in there with just a tiny little blanket and my bag and thought I was completely covered and no one could see me. And then the middle of the night, I heard people whispering around me. And that area is not super great in Rome. And I hear these guys whispering in Italian, and I don't understand Italian. And I don't know if they know that I'm there and if they're conspiring something, but they're kind of like circling me and still whispering. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do here? And so my plan was I just got up and ran and out at them and yelled and just screamed. I just went, ah! And like ran, arms flailing and everything. Not like punching, just like, I'm a crazy person. And they just sort of like uninterestedly left. There was no altercation. They just saw that. We're not startled by it at all. And then just went,
ugh. What did you think?
All right, well, we have
someone
else
to go.
You
were doing when you did that? Is that like, this is what works with bears, so I'm going to try it with local Italians as well? You were trying to look like a crazy person?
Yeah. I was just trying to do something that changed the footing a little. Whatever. They had all the power in that situation. And I was like, how do I get some of this back? I'll be unpredictable. And if you're dangerously unpredictable, sometimes people will just think that's not worth it.
Once again, the show is Quick Question, and we'd like to start off by thanking our listeners who prefer to be called Scenes from a Quick Italian Questerant. Let me tell you what happened there. So,
I think the trail's pretty clear.
I'm not sure it is, because I feel like I've been front-loading our nicknames for our fans with focus on the quick part, like Quickless Cage and Quick Nulty and Quickole Quidman and whatnot, and like not focusing on the quest part. And so I wanted to, like, what are words that contain est, so I can give that some play. And I got rest and I got restaurant, and I thought, oh my god, Quicktalian Questerant, that's perfect. Let me make sure that's the actual title of the Billy Joel song. But it's much longer than that. It's Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. So that's why it's Scenes from a Quick Italian Questerant. It's really lucky that we were talking about Italy today.
That was great. I didn't even realize that we were teeing you up like that.
Yeah.
Also, you know, people are familiar with the idea of an Italian restaurant outside of the Billy Joel song.
I don't think they are. Feel like really he brought that to the mainstream. But anyway, we ask a lot of our listeners. We ask that you obviously listen, we ask that you subscribe, and we ask that you support our Patreon if you feel like it. Seems like a waste of time and money to me, but we also ask you to rate and review us, and we like to call out one of those reviews every week to read on air. I have printed the reviews out on index cards. I've pinned them to my wall, and now I'm going to throw a dart at the wall, and wherever the dart lands, that is the review I will read. So here I go.
There goes your deposit.
Dart in hand. Dart throw. Whoa! Landed on a 5-star review written by someone named Crazy Lou. Isn't that nuts? And they wrote, I have enjoyed this podcast much more than I thought I would. If you're looking for a podcast about two friends who discuss random things in an incredibly earnest and entertaining way, give it a listen. If not, move right along and find something else.
Yeah.
I love the hostility at the end there.
Yeah, I love that it's like, if it's not for you, then fuck you. Go do your own thing. What do I care?
What are you doing here? Get out of here.
Dog in this fight. Do what makes you happy, man.
I also obviously love, I've enjoyed this podcast more than I thought I would. Just went into it with very low expectations.
I do like that a lot too.
Usually you guys get the praise and the reviews, and they don't talk about me. And this one, it was like they had a feeling about your past performances and interactions. Right. And they did not think highly of you.
The bar was low already.
Yeah. I was spared that one.
Whatever previous experience they've had with us, it was a C at best.
Should we get into the show?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Soren, I got a quick question.
Yeah.
How do you feel about endings in pop culture franchises? We've had a few recently. Marvel's Endgame is now on streaming, and a lot of people have seen that, and that's the culmination of, I don't know, 20 years and 27 movies or something absurd like that. We're seeing the end of Veep and Game of Thrones, and I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about endings of these big zeitgeisty properties in pop culture, broadly.
I do. I don't know if this is what you're... I don't want to step on your toes here. My feelings on it are that a showrunner or a creator gets to decide how it fucking ends. And I think that there's like been this weird turn in culturally where people are like, no, we as the audience get to decide. If you did it wrong, we're going to start a petition and turn it the other way. We're going to figure out a way to make the ending different.
That's one of my favorite incredibly stupid things that has been happening lately. When Game of Thrones ended and there was this petition that was going around that was asking to redo the final season of Game of Thrones with better writers that would be more satisfying to the fans, and every step of the way fans were like, we're up to 118,000 signatures, we're up to 200,000 signatures, we're up to 8 million signatures, like as if there's going to be a fucking number that's going to matter, you goons, you idiots. Like, who would that petition possibly be for that HBO is like, well, there's...
I hope no 200,000 people are listening.
But that HBO would suddenly be like, oh, wow, 700,000 people didn't like the finale? Well, then, for heaven's sakes, let's spend another $400 million making this show again to appease this small group of people. I don't know. Like, I just don't understand the thought process of... an audience member that is that entitled that they think like I understand being let down by a finale. You can be let down and you can voice those concerns and you can even write an article or a book about how you think it should have ended. But the idea that if you rally enough support, you will convince the creators of the show to do it differently is insane to me.
Yeah. That you're going to change history somehow. It's the same thing's happening with Star Wars, even though I guess Last Jedi doesn't really qualify as a finale. Still, the people are like, they see something in a piece of pop culture that they don't like for whatever reason. And they're like, no, well, we're the audience. We're the ones that matter. The customer is always right. And we say change it.
Yeah.
And like that sort of entitlement is brand new, I would say, of like the last 10 years. And it's possible. I'm trying to like think of where it was born from. I think it's when you start giving an audience any power over the story. The guy who wrote The Martian, which is a book that then became a movie with Matt Damon, he's a guy who released that chapter by chapter online. And he would do it very openly saying, if I get anything wrong here, I want to know and I'll fix it. And so there were a lot of scientists reading it. There were physicists reading it. And people were like, oh yeah, this wouldn't actually happen on Mars. And he'd be like, okay. So he'd change it. And he gave them a lot of power with that. I think something like Firefly, when Firefly was canceled and then the fans all rallied and made it become a real thing again, made it become a movie. that was suddenly you're giving fans a lot of power, and that felt really good in the moment. And everyone's like, yes, this is a good direction we're headed. And now I think we're seeing the pendulum sort of swing in the other direction where it's like, no, these people don't deserve a lot of this power.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of this is internet and these fan campaigns. And like you're, like you said, we're going to get Firefly. We're going to make that Serenity, or you're going to have a Kickstarter that's going to make this movie. And I think a side effect of that is, fans donate money for this Kickstarter, and then the people who make the movie are like, now I want to hear from the fans and I want to incorporate that. And that inflates fan sense of responsibility or influence on a property, where just the fact that they like it means that they're in charge of shaping it, which isn't necessarily true, and it can't be true. And I think it's not actually what fans want if they dig deep down inside, but it's all just symptomatic of the internet, where you get a little bit of access and a little bit of influence. And now it's like, no, it's not enough that I brought back Firefly and Serenity. Now I want it to be the story that I want it to be. And I want to decide how Game of Thrones ends. And I deserve that because I like this thing.
Yeah, it was, there's some weird mergence with slash fiction. Maybe it's like being Twilight. Twilight was slash. I'm saying that right.
You are. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes
I'm really focusing on.
Sometimes you say it toilet, but you did it right this time.
Yeah.
Don't get in your head about it or anything.
No. It's,
as a quick side note, I use my son goes, the sun going down, and I said, yeah, it's Twilight, and he goes, toilet, and I was like, oh fuck, I do say it weird. It may have been that where like, there was like this marrying of slash fiction with an original property, where like slash fiction gained some credibility, and everyone was like, no, there, you can tell a really good story in this sort of expanded universe designed by the fans. And, or maybe it was Shades of Grey. I can't remember which one started as slash fiction, but,
50 Shades of Grey was like,
yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah. It wasn't Twilight.
No, 50 Shades of Grey started as toilet fan fiction, and then they changed a couple of names and made it not vampires.
Got it. Okay, yeah. So that slash fiction can gain some power and some recognition as a real art form in the world. Felt like this. It jump-started a lot of this, where people start to think, yeah, the fans should get to decide what direction this goes. And it's like, no, I mean... You like this property originally because somebody was telling a good story. Let them tell that story. Like once you want to tell a good story, maybe people will pay to see that.
Right. This is probably an unpopular opinion of our audience, which I imagine is mostly just like the very nice, well-meaning fan folks. But I strongly resent the idea of like the democratization of script writing, the idea that like, well, we got enough signatures, we've got a lot of people that agree that this is where the story should go, and it's like, that's not how stories should be written. I'm really sorry, I agree with democracy in most cases, but not in the case where you're saying this property that already existed that you liked, you are now deciding you're in control of. I don't buy that. Like
And what are you getting out of it? Where's the surprise in that? Like the part of the appeal of reading or watching a piece of media or a story or narrative is that you're going to get something new out of it, as opposed to something you already created. The artist isn't reading their own work and being like, fuck yeah. I don't know what an audience expects from that. If they're telling the story themselves.
Right. I would never write anything that was...
Who's that for?
That was... I'm at chapter 8 of a 10-chapter novel that I planned. And then I'm like, all right, now what do you guys think? I don't know. I got us here. What do you guys, how should I wrap this up? I would never do that. That said, I think last season of Game of Thrones sucked fucking ass.
It did. They just sort of checked out.
They did. And because... So, scripts that are nominated for Emmys become like public domain. So you can like see, they put the Iron Throne, which is the finale of Game of Thrones. They put that script on the internet. You could just like find it right now. You can go and read the entire script. And I feel like you can see from reading it how checked out the writers were. And the ringer.com has an article that did a good job digging into it. That is just a close reading of the Game of Thrones series finale script. And there are parts where they just write in like the stage directions, like Bran says something, Bran says something strange. And then stage direction is like, Tyrion thought that was a weird thing to say, but the new king is weird. Anyway, like they just like, there's no movement to explain anything. There's like, they were admitting this thing that they wrote makes no sense, but that's okay. They've just decided it's all right that it makes no sense because it's Bran and who cares?
Yeah. Like, the characters are built. Let them run the story now. Yeah. And maybe we don't understand it all. I mean, that's fine. I think criticism of that is great and healthy and good. Like everyone can do that, but the effort to rewrite it as something else certainly. Is so baffling to me.
I can't remember what show it was, but there was a, someone was talking about, one of the creators was talking about, because they release it in like a non-binge mode. So they release it weekly, that a lot of the like crazy Reddit and subreddit fan theories were like really good ideas. And they were like, yeah, we were like, these ideas are pretty good. Like these are better than some of our ideas. I hate that so much. Cause I think that like, you're not getting like whatever the vision of the person who wrote it in the first place is.
Yeah.
You're getting like someone else's take on it.
Yeah. You're through the looking glass at that point. Yeah. As soon as you start writing for an audience that's going to be critical of whatever you do, you're fucked. Like you, I don't know if you do this, Dan, but when you write, are you writing to somebody individually who you respect? Are you writing something like, I think they would like this? Or are you writing to like cover your ass against people who might take shots at or try and poke holes in it?
Oh, of those choices, certainly the former.
Yeah. Me too. And you can see how damaging it is from people. And we've known people who have written to what they think might be the hypothetical straw man audience who's like ready to hate them. And it's like,
that
it
was
just
a very
ruins a piece.
Early lesson that I learned at Cracked, thanks to Jack O'Brien, no relation to you. I was writing an article about presidents. It was the five most baddest presidents of all time. It was a big article for me and for the site at the time. And I was taking a very long time to write it. I was still new for writing for an audience. And Jack was like, hey, where's this article? What's going on? And I was explaining to him. I was like, well, I'm worried commenters are going to say this. So I'm trying to preempt that argument. And I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do that. And he's like, ignore them. Don't write for the people who are going to poke holes in it right now. Don't write for the people who are going to find something wrong with it. Just write the thing that you want and give it to me tonight. And so I did that. And then it became a very huge article because Jack is very bright. And I've sort of used that to guide a lot of my writing since then.
Yeah, that's really good. I think on writing, Stephen King said like, yeah, you write for somebody that you respect. Write for one person. And if that one person likes it, then it's a success.
I try to write for either someone in my family or if I'm not thinking of a specific person, like a hypothetical person who is slightly smarter than me. Someone who is exactly as smart as me, but a little bit more, and I'm trying to impress them with writing. That's
my brother. I write for my brother. Like, I'm like, I know he's a better writer than me. I know he's funnier than me. I'm going to write something that I think is going to impress him.
Yeah.
That's what I aim for. It goes against the crack disease that you and I both have, which is you watch something,
are full of cracks.
They're crack
these
disease,
wandering
yeah.
bones.
The disease that you'll never get rid of, which is you watch something or you read a book and you see it in a weird element, something that stands out as seemingly very wrong. And your first instinct is to try and figure out why that was included. Just assume it's intentional and how does it make the story better? And then you do the work of like figuring out how that's actually better for the story.
Yeah.
And it just feels like it's so much lazier to just see something weird. And instead of trying to do that work and trying to like treat it like a college essay, they're being like, I don't like it. Get rid of it. That element sucks.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, I'm agreeing with you. You're 100% right. Do you have any questions for me while we're doing this podcast?
Yes, I do. I have a quick question for you, Dan. Do you give your dog pep talks when no one else is around?
I do. I absolutely do. Well, what do you mean pep talks?
I think it's pretty common for pet owners. And also, I would do this with my child when he was just a baby and couldn't possibly understand.
Like, it's rare that I need to hype him up for anything. He doesn't have a lot of events.
Yeah. But I just mean, you're trying to build your dog's confidence up.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you're going to tell him how handsome he is.
I will do.
You're
gonna tell him. So what I do, and I do it in public too, because I have no shame about talking to either myself or my dog in public. And we do it on walks a lot where they're very long. Are you familiar with Shaggy Dog Stories? Does that scan for you?
No.
No? Oh, so it's like, it's interesting. It's like a literary thing. It's sort of a commentary on jokes and comedy. It's plays with the expectations that the audience will have on what a joke is going to be. It's very often, the hallmarks are, it's a long story with a lot of details, and it usually culminates with like an anticlimax. And what's an example? Like, so the reason that it's called Shaggy Dog, apocryphally, is that there's a story, this boy in this town. So he's got this dog, right? And it's very, very shaggy. It's probably the shaggiest dog I've ever seen. It's got like really shaggy hair. Its name is Steven, which is a fun name for a dog. And the boy thinks he's alone and noticing how shaggy it is. And then someone else in the town is like, that's a pretty shaggy dog. And the boy's like, right? Oh my God, you're right. That is a shaggy dog. So the boy decides to enter it in a competition, like a local, just like a town competition for the shaggiest dog. He reads in the newspaper that there's a shaggy dog competition. So he goes and he enters his dog in this shaggy dog competition. He enters Steven in the shaggy dog competition. And he comes in first place. And it's like not even fucking close. He runs away with it. And then he goes to the mayor and he was like, did you see my dog in the paper? It's pretty cool. He won this competition. And the mayor was like, yeah, you should enter him in a few more competitions. And so he enters in, I believe it's regionals next. And then it's like the whole of the Northeast corridor he enters, and he wins all those times. And there's like fucking stories about this dog. It's so shaggy, Steve and the shaggy dog, and all these papers. And then the boy enters him. There's like the world competition for the shaggiest dog. And the boy, I can't remember if I told you the boy's name. The boy's name is Byron. It's not important, but his name is Byron. He's 8 years old. He's got a shaggy dog, Steven. Steven's such a good boy. Enters him in the world competition, goes to the judge, and the judge says, it's not that shaggy. Those are shaggy dog stories. Very long stories with lots of detail, and the end is no payoff whatsoever.
Yeah, okay.
So that's the kind of thing that I do with Jackson. Like, the end is always the same. And they're more pleasant than that. But it's always, I'll be walking him and be like, listen, Jackson, I just got off the phone with this newspaper. They they wanted a comment from me. They did this study. It was born out of, I mean, originally they're trying to match a study that they did in England. There's this study in Oxford about Britain's best little boys. And we wanted to recreate that study in America. And so they talked to some folks at Harvard, and they talked to some folks at Princeton, and they talked to some folks at Rutgers, which is sort of like the Princeton of New Jersey. And we gathered all of this information, and we talked to scientists and doctors and astronauts, and they just found out, it's you. You're the best boy, Jackson. You're the best boy in the world.
That's wonderful.
I did that with my nephew and godson Murphy when I live with my brother and sister-in-law too, that I would see him every morning for breakfast, and this wasn't telling him he was the best boy, but it was still like a very long story that was like, Murphy, I got some terrible news. I went to my doctor yesterday on the way home from work, and he said that like everything can be fine. It's bad right now. It's rough. I'm just like my teeth are loose and some of my hair is falling out, and like my eyes are a different color than they're supposed to be, because it turns out my doctor, who's a woman, by the way, she said that I'm not getting enough toes in my diet. And then I pretend to eat his toes.
Yeah.
Every morning was a different long solid. Walk to get to I eat his toes.
It's just another shaggy dog. Yeah. Those are, I think those are wonderful. Do you say anything to your dog before you leave the apartment each day? Like, do you tell him what's happening that day?
I tell him I love him and to let me know if there are any phone calls.
That's pretty good. Pretty
you
good.
Know, what one of my favorite bits was...
do you even have a landline? Wait, do you have a landline?
I do, yes.
Okay. All right.
And when I come home at the end of the day, I ask him, what did you do today? Or tell me about your day. Which he can't because he's a dog. But
yeah, no, I get
another
it.
One of my favorite bits. We talked about this off mic that I had a friend from Brazil who was staying with me for a while. And mm-hmm. she exclusively talks to him in Portuguese. And it's one of my favorite bits, and I love it so much.
He's just been waiting all this time to have somebody he could communicate with. That's great. Yeah, when my son was a baby, I would have like long heart-to-hearts with him.
like sincere ones or bit ones?
Bit ones. But they were like partially bit and also partially like, look, these are like words you can live by. Where like, I would go on walks with him all the time where he'd be on my chest, because when you're with a baby that's like 3 months old, you're kind of cooped up in your house. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of places you can go, and so we go on lots and lots of walks, and so I would take him on a walk every once in a while.
And so when you say you do walks and he's on your chest, you're doing crab walk and he's just sitting on your chest, right? Is that correct?
Sitting upright. Yeah, he could sit upright at a very early right. age. Okay, good. And balance very mm-hmm. well. And I walk around like the Exorcist
yes,
girl.
Yes, good.
While we're walking, I would tell him, Ronan, it's the only things you have to worry about in the world is that you have to be brave and smart and kind. And that's it. And I'd be like, if you can be all those things, you will be successful in your entire life. And if you're ever in a situation where you don't know what to do and you have two different directions you could go, choose whichever one will force you to be brave and smart and kind and like that kind of stuff that he couldn't possibly understand. Right. The one that he picked up on though was over time, because now he can talk, is he picked up on brave. He liked the idea of that. And so now when he's like, he goes to swim class sometimes at daycare at Tuesdays and Thursdays in the summer, they go to swim class and he's very nervous about getting his head in the water and just that he's, you know, a little smaller than some of the other kids. And so I'll pull him aside before school and I'll be like, just if you're ever nervous while you're there, just remember you're the bravest boy on the block. But the block, that's like, that's the only region that's as big as the
like
universe
your, is. Your as far block, as we're yeah. concerned. Okay. So he has an yeah, idea I of say, your block as the end all be all of existence.
That's what yeah. I mean, surely he knows there's bigger things than that, but I think I've always thought it was really fun to just have it be that. Like, I'll tell him that he's my favorite boy on the block. Or yeah, that he's the bet that I love him more than any other kid on the block.
Right. Like just so he knows that when you travel as a family, he's got to step his game up a little bit.
Yeah. Just because it's fun for me. And so, yeah, I'll tell him he's the bravest boy on the block. And I'm like, and if you're scared, you tell yourself, I'm brave. Say it right now with me. And he'll be like, I'm brave. And I'm like, no, yell it. And then, and now when he... if there's ever a circumstance, sometimes I'll like be around him where I can tell that he's anxious and I'll see him to himself go, I'm brave. And I love it. And I'll get him to shout it sometimes. And it really does help him. You'll see him like, I'll be like, are you ready to go to school now? He's like, yeah. Like he's on board with it. He's ready to do it.
He's going to like terrify other kids when they start playing sports. You're lining up against him. He just stares at you and yells, I'm brave.
Just getting in someone's face. I'm the bravest boy on the block, motherfucker. Who are you?
Who am I? I'm the bravest boy on the block. You don't know who you're messing with. There's nobody on the block braver than me. House is 1755 down to 1647. I'm the bravest of all of them. Yeah. And then I'll also occasionally tell him, if he seems anxious about something, I'll tell him that he can do anything because he's a buoy. Which is something that my dad used to tell me mm-hmm. and is, you know, nonsense. But when I was young, it felt like something.
That worked for you when you were young, yeah?
Yeah, it did. That somehow that we were different. And I think that that's like a, it seems sort of elitist, but I think it's really important in a family that like you establish that your family is different. Like your family is, what you guys have is better, or you're better than, I don't want to say you're better than other people, but like that you're doing it right, and that your family is, you have a lot of responsibility in that, but that you're just better. Yeah. You're better.
We did that too. Like, it was never articulated as better. And it, like same as yours, your father didn't articulate it as you're better, but it was a certain different distinction with us. It was whenever my brothers and I would fight or argue, my dad would very clearly set us aside and be like, we don't fight. You're best friends. Yeah. We don't fight. And it was like, there was something that was subliminally, subconsciously put in our brains. It was like, oh yes, we are the family that doesn't fight. We are the brothers that stick together and look after each other.
Yeah. They're like the we're doing it right.
Yeah.
Idea. There's the book by Cormac McCarthy called On the Road.
Nope. That's Kerouac. Jack Kerouac.
There's a book called The Road by Cormac McCarthy. And in that, you know, the kid keeps asking his dad, like, we're the good guys? And he's like, yeah, we're the good guys. And that's kind of how it feels. The sentiment that I'm trying to give to my child is like, no, we're the good guys.
Yeah.
We're doing it right. We're going to do it right. You can follow my lead. It's fine. You're not lost out here. Like, there is this beacon ahead of you that's like, this will be your guiding light. As long as you're brave and smart and kind, or like you live your life in this particular way, like, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Hey, Soren, quick question.
Go ahead.
Do you have any positive stereotypes? Completely rooted
in... They're all bad.
Rooted in nothing. To give you some time, my illustrative example, I have not looked into this. I don't know why I think this. I could make up an excuse if I wanted to, but I don't feel like it, is that if I come across someone who is not hearing impaired and is not related to someone hearing impaired and is not in the field of dealing with people who are hearing impaired, but they know sign language, I broadly assume that they are a better kind of person. Better than people who don't. Like, if I saw someone who just independently decided, I'm going to learn sign language because it doesn't come up too often. It's not as common as like knowing Spanish in New York as a second language, but it's something that might come up. And if it does, I want to learn this so I can make someone who needs it feel like they have more connection. I would think that person also fucking recycles and remembers birthdays and tips well and all the other things that I have decided to make a good person. Like, I if I see someone doing sign language, I'm like, here are the keys to my apartment. You seem trustworthy.
Yeah. Will you be my emergency contact?
Right.
I feel because what it says about you, it does feel like it does a lot of, it's a shorthand for another long walk, which is, this is a good person, I think.
Yeah.
If they're willing to do that.
I don't think there's anyone who would learn sign languages like to turn it into a scheme or a con of some kind.
Yeah. Or even to pick up women.
Right.
I can't possibly foresee a circumstance in which that would work unless, like, that's who you're aiming for. You're really into Siren from Gladiators,
right,
in the 1990s. Yeah, I definitely have one that I can think of off the top of my head. Fly fishermen, I assume that they are as wise as owls.
Okay.
No, I assume that they are these like stoic rocks of wisdom that the water just parts around. Like, there's something, maybe it's from the river. What's that?
The river runs through.
Yeah, river runs through it. With the idea, and I didn't even watch that whole fucking movie or read the book, but just like the sentiment, that flavor has stuck with me, which is like these sage men connected to the other end of a line with an animal, and like what that means and the patience that it takes to be out there. And you're out there on like this peaceful river. You've made this choice. You're either there in the evening at dusk or in the morning. So like, it's a real endeavor to do it. And the craftsmanship that goes into tying the flies and getting the motion right and everything, it's this hobby that feels so sageful to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all seem like they're the smartest people. Like, whenever there's my instincts, I have two instincts. Whenever something terrible happens in society, the first one is, where are the police? The police should handle this. The police are the good guys, which is left over from my childhood.
Sure.
And then the other one is, Why don't we ask fly fishermen what they think? Let them make the decisions.
That's right. We haven't had like a good president fly fisherman in a very long time. And I think we're due for one who's like, oh, I'm going to just go out on in the river and like wait for one fish, hopefully. And I might spend eight hours and catch nothing.
They bring their vests or their little tiny fanny packs. There's not enough room in there to catch a bunch. They're catching one thing. A lot of times they're just releasing them anyway. But there's something about the polished craftsmanship of like the polished work of the hand motion, getting the fly just right, and coming home fruitless so frequently. I feel like that would just make you wise. Yeah.
Just careful, diligent work for work's sake.
Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way about climbers too, but that's actually, I mean, that's born in something. Yeah. I used to rock climb a lot.
I'm planning on talking to you about climbing for a future episode.
Oh, yeah, you are? Yeah. Okay. We'll save it then.
Bacon, do you have any positive stereotypes? Putting you right on the spot.
I can't also say fly fisherman. Right? I can't think of one right now, but I do think, Dan, yours is, I think, a very good one because I feel the same way about it. And I think it's because there's not much to gain by learning sign language if you don't know someone that needs to know sign language. There's not a way to like monetize it.
No, and you won't be stuck in another country where it will suddenly become useful.
It's like only meant to help people.
Yeah, selfless.
And also it's like a different, you're not easily learning sign language because you know, like you can learn Italian and because you know Spanish. So it shows like a lot of effort to do something that's very considerate that you're not going to take personal gain from.
Yeah. I'll tell you one more, Dan, that's completely irrational. People who can sing, really sing really well, I feel like are touched by providence. Like they were chosen. And that they're just like they're the elves of our Middle Earth. Like they're better people.
There's a lot in that.
As far as I don't sing. I'm not a good singer. And it looks like magic to me. And some people are born with it. Like there's just a raw talent in them. I guess training also goes a long way with it as well. You could probably train your way into being a good singer. But the fact that there are some people who are just, it's innate in them. Like the music and rhythm is innate in them. I'm like, that person is magic.
Yeah. There's a magic to it. And in a way that like I can carry a tune, but I'm not a great singer. Like I don't have a pleasant sounding voice. It's much like what I'm doing right now. But like, at more assaulting pitches. But I have friends that are like singers with like pleasant voices, like the magic that you're talking about. My friend Susan is such a person and she is a teacher and she just like doesn't sing in class and doesn't sing in front of her coworkers. And to me, that's like, it's like a crime. Like it's like she has this superpower that no one around her knows that she has. And I feel like I wouldn't be a strong enough or big enough person. If I had a voice as good as she did, I would, everyone would fucking know it. Everyone on the planet.
Yeah.
And she just like walks around the street and no one knows that she has this gift inside of her that she could just like do whenever she wants.
Yeah. There's like this humbleness to it that I don't possess. If I had a superpower, I would not choose to it's true. And but they're capable of creating these really magical moments. Like you hear somebody who's a really good singer singing to a child and you're like, holy shit.
Why aren't you doing that all the time?
Yeah. Why? I get to have this. I get to be part. I didn't even buy tickets for this.
Does the governor know you can do that?
And I just assume that they're good people. The people who can sing, I'm like, well, what? They can do no wrong. If they're humble enough to keep that under wraps.
All right. Well, I think we've covered a lot today. This is a pretty wholesome, sweet episode, right?
Yeah, I think so. We can have these every once in a while. I think, yeah, there's one for us, one for them, you know?
I need to, forgive me, I need to track. I wrote the social accounts down on this piece of paper. I sealed it up in an envelope and I put it in my lockbox, but the combination to open the lockbox, I have to go... into my old Game
Boy.
Your
apartment has a lockbox and then darts on the wall.
I used to put my high score saved in a game in this Game Boy so I can get the password from there to open the lockbox to get the social accounts. And in the meantime, while I'm doing all that, on the subject of the terror attacks of September 11th.
Oh, God.
Mark Wahlberg quite famously said in a 2012 Men's Journal interview promoting his new movie Contraband, quote, "If I was on the plane with my kids, it wouldn't have went down like it did. There would have been a lot of blood in that first class cabin, and then me saying, okay, we're going to land somewhere safely, don't worry," end quote.
Dude, that's such a good Wahlberg. Now, that's like being able to sing.
Similarly,
that was magic.
I know that you, Soren, you also went on record as to what you would do were you on one of those planes, but I can't for the life of me find where that quote was. If you happen to remember what you said, please tell us. You remember, in this situation, it's 9/11 and you're on a plane with Mark Wahlberg and you said you would do what?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked because this was on, I put this up on Jib Jab and it's since disappeared. I don't know why. If I was on that plane with Mark Wahlberg, I mean, first things first, he and I are making eye contact because we're on the same page on a lot of things. And he and I, we have these conversations with each other just through our eyes. And I would be like looking at him. But at the same time, I'm slowly moving one of his kids over out of the seat next to me. By the way, his kid's sitting next to me because he trusts me to sit next to his other kid. Just like keep him in line. And I'd be like moving that kid's head off my shoulder because he's asleep during this. And getting it over to the side and then slowly pulling out my sunglasses. And I'm going to put those on. Then it's important that I go and I log into the web, the Wi-Fi. Oh,
the Boingo hotspot?
Yeah. Yep.
Famously reliable Boingo hotspot.
Yes. I'm going to go into Spotify and I'm going to play Hip to Be Square by Huey Lewis in the News. I'm going to wait through the commercial that starts out before it.
You don't pay for that?
Then as soon as Hip to Be Square, those first guitar riffs come in, I'm jumping out of my seat. The seatbelt light's still on. I don't give a shit. I'm undoing my seatbelt. I'm jumping out of my seat. I'm going over, first things first, high-fiving Mark Wahlberg. Then he and I are running both hands together into the first terrorist. Now, we're going at such a high speed that we're cutting him directly in half. We're not just knocking him down. Mid-torso just torn directly in half. And we're just dangling this spine between our hands. At this point, we've developed sort of a gallop together. Uh-huh. And I fall into line behind him. We morph into what's more or less a human horse.
Uh-huh. So are
and we trample the next guy.
Are you still hands together at this point?
No. Okay. No, but there was a signal. There was an energy that we're going to talk about later between him.
So you trample the next guy.
We trample him, yeah. Trample him. Like we've been lifting weights so much together that our hands are like these calloused hooves. Mm-hmm. And we're just trampling the next guy. We make our way through. Ah, fuck. Are there 9 guys? 11? I can't remember how many
guys. Can't remember if it's 9 or 11.
The next thing I'm doing, I'm taking the box cutter off the ground mm-hmm. from this terrorist that we just trampled. And I'm waiting until the terrorists all kind of line up. And then I'm throwing it through them. Through like something soft, like their skulls.
Sure.
It's just going through each one of their skulls and doing the most damage. And like sticking in a wall going
yeah.
And then from that point you see the window start to crack below it and then
oh no,
and the window breaks open but everybody is already in their seatbelts except Marky and I and so they're all being they're not getting sucked out, but the terrorists have been standing up this whole time, and so they all of them get sucked out of this window, this tiny little window, and you can just see like guts coming out of their mouths and stuff, and it's real cool. And Hit to Be Square comes to a finale, it comes to an end. I jump at the window, and with just one massive muscular thigh, I block the suction out of the plane. Mm-hmm. And everybody's saved. Standing ovations around. I pull the rest of my sunglasses out, throw them onto the faces of everyone in the audience. because at this point it's an audience. And then he and I do a rendition of Good Vibrations. There it is.
There you go.
Soren, I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
No notes. You could find Soren at Soren_LTD on Twitter. You could find me on Twitter at DOB_INC. You could find Bacon at Make Me Bacon Please. That's exactly as you'd expect it to be spelled, except please is PLS, and it's all one word. You can email us at qqwithsorenanddaniel@gmail.com. You can find the show on Twitter at twitter.com/qq_sorenanddan. You can find us on Instagram at qq_with_soren_and_daniel. You can reach out to Vincent, who records and edits and engineers all of our podcasts. You can't know just how many things I get wrong that Vincent corrects at the beginning of every single episode. Starts with me being like, I put the microphone in my mouth, I swallowed it accidentally, and then I FaceTime Vincent and he fixes everything for me. So really, he deserves a lot of credit. You can get him at siliconbeachpodcasts.com. And we also have a Patreon that you can find probably by just Googling Patreon, quick question, Soren Daniel. Unless there's a more efficient way, Bacon.
No, that's the best way.
That's the best way.
No mistakes.
Namaste.
No mistakes.
And namaste to you, Bacon.
Okay.
Bacon, do you want to say our closing word? Because you're going to be gone for the next couple of weeks.
No. You guys are going to do a great job, and I'm sad that I'm going to miss hearing you guys chat and being buds for a couple weeks.
Okay, very sweet. Do you want to say our closing word? Because you're going to be gone for the next couple of weeks, like the word that we say that ends the show?
Yeah, quack, quack.
Fuck!
Quack. Bye. Quack. Bye, Satan.
Oh, bye.